Welcome into NHL at the Rink. Dan Rosen here. Sean Rourke is always to my right. And Sean, as they say, we're dealing with a lot of stuff, aren't we?
We are dealing with
maybe
a lot of
stuff. Maybe they don't say that. They say another word, but we're not going to say that word.
No. This is a PG-rated show. Yes. My kid listens.
Yes.
We don't want to be using that kind of
good,
language.
Good. But there's a lot going on here. Just think of this week. We always get news before we record. And we prefer that the news comes like the Vegas Golden Knights did it. We're recording here on Thursday afternoon. Vegas Wednesday morning announces Gerard Gallant is out and Peter DeBoer is in. So they give us a little time to think about it before we jump on these microphones and start talking about it.
Yeah, well, they didn't announce. They shocked the hockey
dropped
world.
Dropped it right on us, yeah.
It was a bombshell in the truest sense. Out of nowhere, there was no inkling that it was going to happen, which... when you're a news guy, that's the best kind of news, right? It's not building up, oh, this could happen, and you work it over until...
unless you're the one breaking it.
Yeah, but by the time it happens, you've already done every permutation of it. This was a live-action exercise. Why did it happen? Yeah. What's next? And it's still going on. As we're taping this, the Vegas Golden Knights are having their morning skate, and that's when we'll start to get answers about what Pete DeBoer is going to do with that team, who management feels is underachieved, even though they're 3 points out of first place in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, so as we record, I mean, they've lost four straight, and I don't know if that was the undoing for Gerard Gallant. Kelly McCrimmon, actually, their general manager, was kind of vague. Didn't offer many specifics on what it was that they sensed with the team. Maybe it's just that they were not clicking on all cylinders the way that they feel they should be. But if you look at some of the underlying numbers with Vegas, well, first off, it's not even an underlying number. They were just 9-4-2 in December. And Gerard Gallant, 2 weeks ago, was good enough to be the coach for the Pacific Division in the All-Star game because they were in first place at that point, at that deadline. Their shooting percentage is low at 5-on-5. Their save percentage hasn't been great. It's been a tough year for Marc-Andre Fleury, both on the ice and certainly off of it. And you wonder, did all of that just conspire against Gerard Gallant?
I don't know, man. Maybe there was a sense of complacency, right? Gerard Gallant's always been known as a player's coach. The players had the utmost respect for him. Gutted that he was fired at practice yesterday in Ottawa. It was the most somber practice that anybody could remember Vegas having. So maybe they want a taskmaster there. I don't know. But look, this team's 3 years old, and everybody forgets that. They were an expansion team 3 years ago. They go to the Stanley Cup final in their first year, which is unheard of, and Gerard Gallant should have got a lot of rope just for that alone. The second year, they're favored to win again, and a Game 7 meltdown cost them going into the second round and who knows how far. And now they're 3 points out of first place with 33 games left. That's not a bad coaching resume. And to say that we found something better, I'm not sure that that's happened.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that question to you. I was going to pose that to you. Are they better with Peter DeBoer? And I asked that question to you, Sean, with the utmost respect for Peter DeBoer. And I think he's a terrific coach. And it very well could be that Marc-Andre Fleury gets hot. The puck starts going in the net a little bit more than it's gone in. They're shooting 7.5% in 5-on-5. Their power play is good. 7.5% is 25th in the league. That's a little bit of puck luck that's gone against them if you consider they're not even close to the league average, right? So if Fleury gets back and they start getting a little puck luck and all of a sudden DeBoer looks like a genius because this team is shoots back up in the first place, we all can see that happening. But with the utmost respect for Peter DeBoer, is he that much better of a coach than Gerard Gallant that he's going to come in and it's just going to be completely different?
No. I would consider them equals.
Yeah.
Right? They both pretty much have the same resume. They've been to a Stanley Cup final. They didn't win it. Both seem to be good playoff coaches. Both seem to be able to get underachieving teams to do well. Peter's done it in Florida and in New Jersey. But I don't see a huge difference. And I also don't see Peter DeBoer bringing Eric Karlsson or Burns with him or even Vlasic. And to me, that's what Vegas needs, right? They need a defenseman, particularly a right-shooting defenseman.
Yes, 100%.
And they don't have that, and Peter can't make one. He's got to work with what he has.
Their only right-handed defenseman is Derek Englund. The rest are all lefties. There's an imbalance there. That's not on Gerard Gallant. That's on the makeup of the roster. Yeah, that's not on him. And they are in desperate need, and I don't know who it is that they could go out and get, but they're in desperate need of a mobile puck-moving, right-handed defensemen to get a little more balance in their offense, because it makes it a little bit easier to defend them when you can make them go in one direction a lot of the times, especially on the blue line. So, Kelly McCrimmon, you make the move. George McPhee, you make this move. Now you got to go help this team out.
Yeah, and I, you know what? If they're going to make this move, good on them, because they're next now if it doesn't work, right? You've said it's the coach, and I've fixed the problem, and now we're going to be good. If you're wrong, who's the next one in line to take the heat? And even if you're right, that Pacific division is a minefield. Like, I don't see anybody pulling away. I don't know if it's a meat grinder, as some of these other divisions have been in the past couple of years, but I don't see a huge variance in any of those teams.
If they get some consistency, I think Vegas could pull away. But we'll see. You know, the thing is, it's the seventh coaching change that we've had this season. Four off the record, which I was shocked to hear was 11 in 2002-03. It's the second one we've had in 2020, which is, we're in our 16th day. So lots of different changes. Barry Trotz today at the New York Islanders morning skate had something interesting to say. He was asked if he was surprised about the coaching changes and the number of them. And he said he is, but at the same time, there's different pressures and expectations. And then he had a great line. He said, expectations are the death of a lot of coaches. And really, the other thing that's the death of a lot of coaches, goaltending. Right? I mean, yeah. Goaltending. Because if you look, and we've talked about it before, the common thread through all of the changes that are performance-based, so I'm not counting Jim Montgomery with Dallas and Bill Peters with Calgary, the other five, has been lukewarm, subpar, however you want to call it, goaltending.
Yeah. Well, think about this. Mike Sullivan of the Pittsburgh Penguins is probably one of the finalists for the Jack Adams Award this
Should
year.
Should be the favorite.
He's done unbelievable things. Matt Murray's been not very good. What if he didn't have Tristan Jarry? We're not having this conversation. That's how fine a line it is. He pulls Tristan Jarry out of the minors, and Tristan's having a year to write home about. I mean, he's going to be in the All-Star game. He's basically saved them while Sidney Crosby and assorted others have been out, while Matt Murray tries to find his game. And, you know, Matt Murray did the same thing to Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, it's the nature of the business. But if he doesn't have that safety net, we're not talking about the Penguins like we are now. So, to me, goaltending is such an important thing, and it's completely uncontrollable.
Like, completely uncontrollable. And if you're a coach in the league now, job security is eliminated, isn't it? I mean, it's just gone when you consider what is going on. If Gerard Gallant, coaching a team that many consider to be the best in its division, just hasn't played quite up to that level, loses his job, where's the rest of the job security?
Well, the job security now has to be in the contract you negotiate. You got to get it up front, because you might not get it on the back end, and then you're paid throughout the life of that contract if you don't get another job. But the other security seems to be, with all these jobs being lost, that guys that are out of work are back in work 34 days for Peter DeBoer.
Yeah, well, and that's the sign of a good coach, you know. And look, the Sharks aren't any better with Bob Bugner as their coach right now. They were 15-16-2 with DeBoer. They're, I think, 6-7-2 with Bugner.
Yeah, and Vegas knows a little bit about Pete DeBoer. They've had some battles. To me, that's going to be the most interesting thing, is watching Pete switch sides. That was one of the ugliest rivalries in the last 2 years. And now, look, it's professional sports and you do that, but it's still going to be interesting to watch him kind of switch sides and go against the players that he was aligned with for those 2 years.
Now, you touch on 34 days for DeBoer. I think it was 35 or in that neighborhood for John Hines before he got the job in Nashville. What's it going to be for Gerard Gallant? Do you think he's back in the league again this season? Because when a guy like, with his track record, especially recently, what he did with Vegas, comes on the market, like I said, coaches have to look over their shoulder.
Sure, and everybody's talked about Detroit.
Sure, it's natural.
It's natural. They're the worst team in the league by far. Steve Yzerman and Gerard go way back, so there's a familiarity there. And then there's some other, not openings, but there's some other teams. You know, Alain Nasruddin in New Jersey is on an interim basis. So you look around, and there's some immediate landing spots for him. But I haven't heard a lot about this, and what kind of struck me is I could see Gerard Gallant not having a job for a little while, and then Seattle coming along and saying, you know what? we're an expansion team.
I wouldn't want to do that.
You know, I don't know if you want to do that or not.
If I was Gerard Gallant, I wouldn't want to do that again.
If I'm Seattle, I'm calling up and saying, hey, why don't you get in on the ground level again and we'll do this again. Now, for Gerard Gallant, it's extremely difficult because he's not going to have the advantages he had with Vegas. The expansion draft will not be nearly as kind to Seattle as it was to Vegas, but you give him enough power to shape the roster like he wants. Maybe he does that. Maybe he takes a year off, recharges his batteries, kind of takes it nice and slow, and then, you know, pretty much the Barry Trotz model in Nashville way back in the day. So that's the thing that kind of struck me is everybody's talking about immediate. Coaches are born to coach, but every once in a while you need a little breather and the right opportunity to come back.
Yeah, that's two expansion teams in, what, 6 years? I don't know. Less than that? I don't know if I'd do that if I was Gerard Gallant. But you never know. The thing is, Detroit makes so much sense, and that's only if Steve Yzerman is going to make a change there.
Yeah.
So if he's going to make a change there, it just makes a lot of sense. Another team, we haven't even gotten to it yet, which shows you where the news is right now on the Vegas thing. We haven't gotten to the Devils yet, who, yet again, in about an hour and a half before a game, decided to drop a bomb on everybody, just as they fired John Hines about an hour and a half before they played Vegas, of all teams. They, Sunday night, dropped another bomb and got rid of their general manager and Ray Shiro before they played Tampa and beat Tampa. We're going to have Martin Brodeur on the show. Marty Brodeur moves from the business operations side to the hockey operations side. He'll be our first guest in a couple of minutes. What'd you make of the Devils thing?
Shocked again. Not that it happened, I guess the timing of it and the fact that all those other moves were allowed to happen with Ray pulling the strings, right? He trades Taylor Hall. He fires the coach. He had to get permission to do those things. I don't think they happened in a vacuum. So management was aware, presumably on board, and then less than a month later, they're like, you know what, we're not going in the right direction. And you talked about some of the vagueness of the Gallant firing. It was even more vague with Ray Shiro. Like, what was the issue? Is it development? Is it goaltending again? You know, we go back to goaltending. Their goaltending has not been very good. Was it something else? Was it the Taylor Hall trade, and all of a sudden they realized that they didn't get what they thought they were going to get, and the rebuild has kind of moved back a couple of steps? There were no answers in that press conference, and there was no compelling reason to do it at that point. They promoted Tom Fitzgerald, who I think is going to be a very good GM, but there was no – you didn't have to take him from somebody else. You didn't have to worry about him getting another job. You could have done it at any point. So I still wonder what happened there exactly.
Well, you know what the beauty of that is we're going to have Marty Brodeur on right now, and we can ask him exactly what – you know, for his opinion and what he knows about what happened. So let's do it right now. Brodeur, obviously the Hall of Fame goalie from the Devils, now on the hockey operations side. Marty, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it does well. Thank you.
So obviously lots of news here. I'm curious, with this change from Ray Shiro being out right now and you moving from the business side to the hockey operations side, what can you tell us about what led to this change? And maybe if you can clear up a little bit of what was maybe a little vague, give a little specifics as much as you can on why the Devils decided to make this move.
Well, you know, obviously it's not a secret the way that the team has performed in the last 5 years, and it's something that the managing partner made a decision that they wanted to go somewhat of a different direction. You know, obviously, the Gray's done some tremendous stuff in New Jersey, but like in the hockey world, like results are important also for the club. And I think the lack of that with the summer that we had a lot more. I think people thought we're going to be a little more competitive, going the right direction, and felt that took a little step back with all the moves we made. So, but, you know, they're never easy decisions. Timing is always something that you never expect. And, you know, like I said they decided to go a different direction on this. And it's the way it goes. We've got to deal with this now.
Marty, since you've retired, you've kind of been preparing for something in the management world. You've done a number of different things, like a lot of players that have made that transition. Were you at the point now where you were ready to do the hockey side of it, or was this a bit of a surprise to you as well? And what is next for you on the hockey side of this operation?
Yeah, well, it was definitely a bit of a surprise. You know, I came in on Tuesday to do my regular job at the office in at the Prudential Center to get into meetings and ask me to you know, kind of jump in and try to help out a little bit. So the future, I'm not 100% sure what's going to happen, but I'm excited to get back. You know, I left the hockey world about a year and a half ago when I decided to transition in the business side with the hockey club. You know, I still live in St. Louis, so for me, it's a commuting thing a little bit. I have a young 10-year-old at home that, you know, in my playing career, I didn't have much time to spend time with my kids because they grew up at the same time as my career was going on. So now I have an advantage to be able to spend time with them, and I valued that a lot. But by saying that, you know, I'm jumping in all in here with the Devils. You know, with Tom Fitzgerald to kind of look over and see what the future could be for the Devils. But I'm really excited about the opportunity that the managing partners and you know, Hugh Weber and Scott O'Neill give me you know, this time around. But it wasn't really expected, so trust me.
I guess my question to you is that I look at Brendan Shanahan with Toronto. John Davidson, obviously, with the New York Rangers. Cam Neely with the Boston Bruins. Is that the future for Marty Brodeur with the New Jersey Devils, that president of hockey operations, the overseer of it, maybe not in all the day-to-day stuff, all the grind of the GM and the assistant GM and the scouting and all that, but, you know, oversee the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the bit of the role that I feel I'm going to be able to execute here with the upper management and the managing partners. Like I said, this is new. You know, it's been only a few days into this, and we're gonna have more conversation. But I think they value a lot of, you know, for the first week or so that we're into this. You know, they value a lot what I have to say, and it's kind of fun. And titles are titles. Like for me, I'm there to advise, but to try to put this ship back on track, because you know we have a lot of good things in place. Like I said, I think Ray and his people did a tremendous job. Just the performance wasn't there, and we got to get to that eventually and soon. And kind of looking forward to the challenge. But like I said, like I'm there to advise everybody from Fitzy, from, you know, from the managing partners, and even the coaches and everybody. I'm kind of around to be a helpful hand for them.
When you look at the Devils, and clearly you have intimately for a long time, and now in this position, what's the first thing that needs to be addressed?
Well, like I said, this is what I'm doing right now. I haven't paid much attention because I didn't expect to jump back into hockey right away, or like this anyway. And so this, you know, I've been on the road with the team, kind of looking from far a little bit of what's going on, and be able to have a better understanding of what's going on and what the franchise has made, how they do it throughout the organization, from our minor league to our development or our scouting. Through, you know, what's going on the hockey operations side. And after that, I'll be able to make a better decision. Right now, it's way too early for me to understand exactly what the issue is, because I haven't paid attention, because I, you know, like I said, I was not part of hockey ops at all.
And a broader question, I guess, where does, from what your conversations with the managing partners, Josh Harris and David Blitzer, patience versus win now approach, where do they land? Where do you guys land, considering the makeup of the roster, the youth that's on the team, but also, you know, the moves that Ray made in the offseason? Is patience still a thing with these managing partners, or are they looking for more right away?
You know, I think they want to understand what the plan is going forward. I think we have to put it together and present something that they're going to be comfortable with, and you know, knowing who they are and how they act, and you know, for the week that I've been talking hockey with them, whatever recommendation we're going to do, and if there's a plan and there's something that patience is always a virtue. You need to have patience. Like you don't build stuff really quick and make our decision because, you know, your expectation is one way or the other. So it'll be a process, there's no doubt. Right now there's a lot of vacancy in the organization, a lot of interim stuff, you know, with the coaches and the GM and so everything's going to be addressed. But right now, the team is concentrated to kind of keep going because the team's playing well. You know, we had some great performance last weekend with beating two top teams, and when you fell back in Toronto, we'll have a little harder game. So that's the consistency we were trying to achieve, as far as what the season is concerned this year. And like I said, there's a lot of things will be clarified later on.
The other thing, I mean, I don't know, Marty, how deeply you've paid attention, but being a goalie, I wonder what you make of Corey Schneider right now. Because really lost in all of the stuff on Sunday with Ray Shiro was the fact that Corey came up. And the idea of a guy who went back to the AHL to try to find it. Have you had any discussions or looked at Corey yet in terms of, if he can rediscover it at the NHL level?
Well, I mean, of course, a tremendously talented goalie. You know, I've played with Corey and know him really well. I just hope he's able to find it. It looked good the last few weeks in the American Hockey League and played, just under two periods in Toronto and looked pretty comfortable. So, it's been tough. I'm sure it's tough on him. It's tough on the organization when you make moves like that. But you have to look at the big picture with him. He's under contract for the next two seasons after this. And it's a guy that it's important to the franchise. So, it's like I said, I haven't paid attention much besides knowing that he's going through a really rough patch right now. But he seems to be at a good place. He seems to be pretty happy. I think he wants to, nobody wants to be in a situation like that, so he's going to try to get out of it as much as he can. But the onus is on him. You know, we can't do it for him, so it's going to be interesting to see going forward what's going to happen. But I'm not 100% sure about that yet.
How much of that, Marty, is it mental versus how much of it is physical? And I don't mean just Corey in particular. I mean for a goalie who has a history and a track record in the NHL and then just seems to not have it anymore and needs to go to the AHL. Well, you're a goalie. I mean, how much of it that position is mental versus physical?
It's, the mental part, the approach of the game, you can't cut corners as a goalie. You really have to pay attention and how your game is at, your mental state is at, your technique. So, like the physical aspect of it is one thing. Going through big injuries, it's how your makeup, how can you get through this and come back? And then Corey, obviously he had the two hip surgeries, and that's tough sometimes, and it stays in your head. And again, I think the mental part of it is something that needs to be at the highest level for a goalie, because you're in your head most of the game. You can't talk to anybody out there.
What's impressed you about Tommy Fitzgerald so far in dealing with him in this new position?
I think the communication skills that he has, I think the work ethic, I think we've been running around like crazy here trying to figure out some stuff, because I think for him and for everybody, it was a big surprise. And I think his leadership has been really good. So I'm excited for him. It's fun to see him go. I'm trying to help him as much as he can. He's welcome all the help he can get right now with being in that situation. And obviously it's a little chaotic because, nobody expected it. And Ray had a way of doing stuff. And now we got to find the common ground between what Ray was doing and what we need to do for the rest of the way. But Tom's been, he's been hard at work so far, and it's been a good transition so far.
All right, we've gotten the serious stuff out of the way, Marty. So Sean and I both want to ask you, if you're in net and now there's all these lacrosse goals coming around, you're a goalie, what are you thinking now that the lacrosse goal is becoming a thing in the National Hockey League? How do you defend it?
Oh, I'm so glad that we didn't have enough skill when I played to do that. I don't know. I think now you got to start paying attention. Players are good. They look at goalies. Goalies are good. When the puck's behind the net, they're on their knees. So what's available, it's the top of the net. So just if you could stay on your feet a bit longer and recognize that that could be an option, it's going to be a little harder for the players to be able to kind of lodge that puck with that stick, because it's going to have to go through your body or your the butt end of your stick or something before he wraps it around. But every single goalie in a wraparound, they go down. That's just the way it goes. Back in the day, we stood on our feet a little more. We were a little more, I would say mobile, but a little more agile, skating up instead of sliding all over the place like goalies are right now. I know it's the way to play, but that's a spot that's vulnerable for a goalie just because, you know, they're on their knees all the time when pucks are behind the net instead of being standing up like we used to do.
So you're telling me nobody ever tried that against you in a game or practice?
I don't remember, really. Yeah. Not in practice, for sure. We didn't have enough skill, for sure.
Oh, I'll wait till I talk to Scott Niedermeyer.
Yeah, well, he's a defenseman. He was the one helping me out.
Hey, so speaking of goals and pretty goals, what do you think of Pekka Rene's goal? That was right out of your playbook.
I was excited to see Pekka doing it. You know, I think it's such a great feat for a goaltender to score a goal, and he did it the right way. Like he showed like the way that the puck kind of bounced. He went off the skate and he was able to collect it, turn around, and shoot it over everybody's head and get in the middle of the net. It was impressive. You know, I'm not surprised because he plays the puck a ton. You know, I was in St. Louis. We had to face him a lot, and it was a big. It was always a big concern of us the way he played the puck, but. Their goalie goals are good. They're fun. They're good for the game.
Definitely are. Marty, we'll end it right there. Good luck in the new role with the hockey operations side with the Devils, and thanks for joining us, all right?
All right, no problem. Take care, guys.
Definitely thank Marty for joining us. Good to get him on. And very interesting, Sean, that he sees himself in that role. It's without a title now, but president of hockey operations, essentially, like I mentioned in the interview, like Shanahan in Toronto and Neely in Boston, right?
Yeah, and he's done the work. He's kind of put his hands in every department as he's come out of retirement and gotten back into the business. So he has a little bit of experience in how a team works on both sides of the ice, on the business side, what they're trying to accomplish financially, and on the hockey side. And he's a great hockey mind. Everybody talks about experience. I don't know that these guys that we speak of in these roles need experience coming in. It's something that they learn as they go along, but they have up here what none of us have, which is this innate hockey knowledge. They can look at a player and say, he's good, he's not good, this is where he fits.
Another guy who, moving on from Marty, another guy who's maybe got a future in a different role in the NHL, Nicklas Backstrom, is playing his own agent, negotiates himself with the Capitals a 5-year, $46 million contract. He could be my agent. I don't have one, but
I've already
be mine.
I've already put in the email to get my next at the rink deal done by... Nicklas Backstrom.
You have an at the rink deal? Oh man, I don't get one of those. I'm gonna have to talk to our producer Bob Bender about that.
I get paid in swag.
Yeah, I don't even get that. We don't even have that. We're lucky we have microphone. No,
so we have the same deal.
Yes, exactly. But you know, seriously, on Backstrom. So 5 years, $46 million, $9.2 million cap charge for him. Great deal for him, and absolutely deserves it. Maybe. Through the course of his career, has been one of the most underrated players in the league, I think. But now, what does this mean for Braden Holtby? Because I just don't see where the money is for Braden Holtby and where the desire is to keep Braden Holtby beyond this season. And he can be an unrestricted free agent because Ilya Samsonov has been terrific and certainly looks like he can fill the shoes as the new number one in Washington.
First of all, not only underrated, but underpaid. And this fixes it for
yes,
Backstrom.
Yes, for Backstrom, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know either. And look, the Capitals are not shy away about walking away from success. Barry Trotz wins the cup, doesn't come back. So I think some of it will depend on what they do. Look, you're walking a tight line because you have all these guys signed long-term. Some of them are older, so you don't have a huge window. Are you going to trust that window in year two to a second-year goalie who's only going to probably play 25, 30 games this year? Are you confident enough to say that's my guy and I can win a cup with him in year two or three?
Well, you look at the way he's playing now. He's playing better than Braden Holtby. I think you can even make the argument that he is the new number one in Washington right now because of how he's playing. Let's move on to another Metro team, Sidney Crosby, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They do is go 18-6-4 without Crosby in 28 games. He comes back, and all he does is get a goal and three assists. You know, Crosby and his return games are unbelievable. But Penguins right now, what Mike Sullivan has done, I have him as the favorite for the Jack Adams right now. I think he's done a terrific job, and I think Jim Rutherford's going to do something also to help this team eventually.
Jim Rutherford will make a trade at the deadline.
He always does.
And he'll try and fix whatever he thinks is wrong with the team. The most amazing thing to me is that some people were actually worried about what was going to happen with the Penguins when Sid came back. What would the impact be on Malkin, the chemistry they had done so well? Not questioning who he is or what he can do, but just, you know, sometimes a team gels in the face of adversity. Sidney's so good, and he's such a team player. Clearly, it's not a concern.
No, he's not. Like, this isn't a winger coming back into the lineup
and demanding the number one center. Yeah,
yeah. No, this is the ultimate team guy coming back into the lineup. Who the only demands that he has is you play hard and you go play where he wants you to play if you play on his line, because when you do that, you score.
Yeah, Bruce Boudreau, who has some of the greatest quotes in the history of hockey, uncorked another one. They were the lucky team that got to play the Penguins in Crosby's game back. And somebody asked them about Crosby coming back. And he said, oh, yeah, that's great. I'm so glad he could come back tonight. Is Mario coming back too?
Well, I mean, for the Penguins today, sort of the equivalent, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's the way they are. Sticking in the Metro, Elvis is alive in Columbus.
He has not left the building.
No, he has not. 6-2-0, 950 save percentage, and a 1.64 goals against, 2 shutouts since December 31st at the time of us recording this Thursday afternoon. An active shutout streak for Elvis Merzlikins of 137-51. It looked awful for the Blue Jackets when Jonas Korpisalo went down. They have to put this guy in who's never won a game in the NHL, and he comes with this quirky personality, this reputation that's a little bit off the beaten path type of guy, and all he's done is win. And John Tortorella, another one, I think, like I talked about with Mike Sullivan, another one that, you know, with the goaltending being what it is, and Sullivan's getting it from Jerry, and now Korpisalo was good, and now Elvis Merzlikins has been terrific. John Tortorella is another one you got to look at the Jack Adams as well.
Yeah, and look, the Penguins have a lot of injuries. They're still more talented than the Columbus Blue Jackets,
who have a ton of injuries.
What John Tortorella has been able to do with that team this year is unbelievable. But I'm so happy for Elvis. Like, he's a guy. There's no shortage of confidence there. I covered him in Traverse City at the rookie tournament. He played in that tournament. Great kid, full of confidence, and then the start to his professional career was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the big ice. I don't know if it's playing for John Tortorella and the bluntness that goes on there and the critiques of the games or what it was, or if it was just, you know, getting used to NHL shooters. But there's no question about this kid's talent and to finally be able to capitalize on it and have some results. I don't know that he was playing badly earlier, but he wasn't having the results, and I think it was feeding on itself. So, you know, and now it's feeding the other way. You look at him, he's confident, he's doing things, he's back to the person he was. For a while, he wasn't talking, and it's not really in Elvis's nature, the little bit I know of him, not to talk, but I think he really needed to concentrate, and I think the team wanted him to concentrate on his game. So hopefully he's all the way back and he's got his confidence, and if he does, he's going to be a treat to watch.
This guy, I think he rolls into the players' parking lot in Columbus and his license plate says Elvis on it. So you know he's coming, right? And look, and he's playing in behind a defense that's playing terrifically. The Blue Jackets, 12-2-4 since December 9th, that 28 points in that span, one shy of what the Lightning have done in that span, and they're allowing 1.78 goals per game in that span. A team that's struggling defensively, and that'll get to our next guest with this one as well, Mike Zeisberger, our colleague here at NHL.com. The Maple Leafs, Morgan Riley out, Jake Muzzin out, and they've allowed 22 goals in their last four games at the time we record this.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's all their defense, because Morgan Riley was in all but one of those games, and that was the 7-4 loss to a 7-4 win against the Devils. But as a team, you know, they're so much fun to watch, but they don't really pay a ton of attention to their defensive structure at time. They want to go, go, go. Awesome to watch. I don't know how fun that is to coach. Maybe that's the way that Sheldon wants to coach him. I'm not sure, but it's a tough way to play hockey, especially when things get tight down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Well, we can get into a little bit of that with Mike Zeisberger, our next guest, who joins us from Ottawa, where he is covering the Vegas Golden Knights for us. And the news of Peter DeBoer obviously being their new coach, they're in Ottawa right now, as is Zeiss. Zeiss, how is Ottawa?
Ottawa's Ottawa. I actually went to school here, so thanks for having me on, by the way, guys. And I enjoy the city, but I'll tell you how many games that I've covered in Ottawa through all these years, dating back to the Battle of Ontario's at the beginning of this century between the Leafs and Senators, where they met four times in 5 years. Today at Peter DeBoer's introductory press conference, when I was asked to, they hand out the microphone when you're asking questions, and you have to say your affiliation. So I went, yeah, it's Mike Zeisberger, Toronto, NHL.com, because I spent so many damn days in this arena during my Toronto Sundays covering the Leafs and the Senators. I just got, I love working at NHL.com, but, old tricks and old habits die hard, guys. And like I said, I've spent many a day in that arena out in Kanata, which, by the way, still is nowhere near Ottawa.
And in that time, you've spent a lot of time around Peter DeBoer and know Peter very well. What were your impressions from today? I mean, he walks into somewhat of a tough situation, almost. I think it's almost harder than taking over a team that's not very good because there are no huge expectations, at least in that first year, because the team's already proven that it's not very good. Here's a team that's supposed to be among the lead of the West and felt like they had to make a coaching change. Where's Peter at in all this?
Well, yeah, Sean, you make a great point. Peter said that, even though he has taken over teams before, this is obviously his fourth NHL coaching job after the Panthers, the Devils, and the Sharks, but this is the first time he's taken over a team mid-season. So he said he reached out to some of his other friends in the coaching fraternity, like Paul Maurice of the Winnipeg Jets, who has done that in the past, just to get an idea. So, the Golden Knights, they play in Ottawa Thursday night, Saturday night in Montreal, and then on Tuesday in Boston. So he's going to use these 3 days just to kind of get acclimatized a little bit. The one thing he does have going in his favor a little bit, and he pointed that out, is that the team's week-long break and All-Star break are coming up. So that'll get him a chance to look at the systems and implement some of the things he wants to do. But the other thing is, and the thing that he says, I almost know the Knights better than I know my own wife and kids, because, the Sharks and having coached the Sharks, the Golden Knights and the Sharks, very much rivals in the Pacific Division. They've had a couple of heated playoff series. We can all remember last year when the Sharks came back from 3-1 deficit to win game 7. And eliminate the Knights in the first round, where Gerard Gallant, the man that he replaced as coach of the Golden Knights at the time, called him a clown. So, rightly or wrongly, and for positives and maybe a little bit of negative, Peter knows the Knights very well. He's game planned against them. So in that respect, he's not kind of coming in from the cold. He does have kind of a pulse of what this team is all about.
Did any of that come up today, Zeiss, in the press conference? The all of that history that he has, is that now water under the bridge for Peter DeBoer? Is his personality is such that he could just kind of brush it to the side? I mean, the name calling, was it a major? Was it not a major on Cody Eakin? He's switching sides here, basically.
Yeah, no, he said that he and Gerard Gallant, number one, had a discussion about that, either during the summer or early in the season, and bygones seemed to be bygones. And as Peter said, I used to hate playing in the Shark Tank until I got my coaching job there. So he thinks it'll be fine. Some of the players were pretty funny this morning, like Mark Stone, who, under other circumstances, this would be a big deal in Ottawa, because it's the first time that Mark Stone will be playing in Ottawa against the Senators since they traded him to Vegas last year. But obviously with DeBoer here coaching his first game for the Golden Knights, that is kind of the story. But Stone was saying, look, 10 months ago, I wouldn't have said anything nice about the guy. He goes, in our dressing room, nothing good is ever said about the San Jose Sharks. but then he changed up and he said, look, Peter's a good coach. You look at his track record. And that is shown by it. And the other thing he said is, look, we know that we have a team that should be more successful. And he said, Peter must know that too, because look how quickly it took him to accept the job. And guys, you know, that was perhaps the most interesting thing that I took from this, because when Peter got the call, he said the call came out of left field from the Vegas Golden Knights. Peter DeBoer yesterday morning was sitting at a pool with his wife and daughter in Florida when the call came. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't expecting it. Like I said, he said it came out of left field. And he said it didn't take me a long time to make up my mind, because he said if you were to list in order the ideal jobs to have in the NHL, he said the Vegas job would be at the top of the list. So it's been such a whirlwind for him, guys, that he wasn't here for the skate. He had to somehow get here. He had a canceled flight making his way from Florida. He arrived at the rink today. He didn't have any skates. He doesn't even have a suit with him.
Wow.
So somewhere in Canada, there will be a clothier that will be very, very happy as Pete DeBoer buys a suit for tonight's game.
I'm sure it was easy to get to Kanata from Florida. Not a problem
at
all.
It's not easy to get to Kanata from Ottawa.
So here's my question for you, and we brought this up a little bit earlier in the show, and I would love your opinion on it. Is this an upgrade?
That, you know what, Sean, that's a fascinating question, because I think, you know what, I have respect for as much respect for Gerard Gallant as I do for Peter DeBoer. So I don't know if I would say it's an upgrade. I think that DeBoer is a little more of a disciplinarian, whereas Gallant is a more of a player's coach. But I think that if you're asking, look, if you're looking at who was the best guy out there, I think that Peter DeBoer was as good as you were going to get. And I think that for whatever reason that Gerard Gallant was let go, I think that the Golden Knights hierarchy looked at it and said, you know what, we got to step on the gas pedal here and scoop up this guy before somebody else does. So obviously, it's funny because we talk about, you know, Peter DeBoer saying that how well he knows the Golden Knights. Well, you know, they played in the playoffs, I believe, the past two seasons. So the Golden Knights and their hierarchy also know what Peter DeBoer is about. When you get away from all the trash talking and that, the way that he coaches, the way that his players played for him, and obviously in their minds, he was the best guy for the job. So an upgrade, I would say, in coaching terms, it's probably pretty even, but there is a difference in style for sure.
Mike, you know they call you names because they're jealous of you, right? That's what your mom told you that when you were a kid, right?
Sticks and stones?
Yeah, but name calling is out of jealousy. That's so they must have really liked Pete.
It's true.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe he'll show up tonight wearing a clown nose. Now, that would be a story.
I just hope he's got a suit. How about that? Wanted to move on.
Yeah, he never said it was going to be a tailored suit.
Yeah, I don't know what it could be like. Like Joe Pesci and My Cousin Vinny showing up to the courtroom. And
hey, guys, you got to remember the market I come from Toronto. Back in the 1970s, Harold Ballard, then the owner of the Leafs, fired Roger Nielsen and then said, look, Roger, I'll rehire you if you walk out behind the bench with a bag over your head. Now, thankfully, Roger didn't do it, but that is a fact that he was asked to do it. So if Pete DeBoer showed up with a clown nose and a clown suit tonight, nothing would surprise me.
Man, that would be awesome. I now hope he does that. I really do, but it's not going to happen. But you bring up Toronto, where you're from, so we got to ask you about the Maple Leafs. Morgan Riley, that's a brutal injury for the Leafs. Jake Muzzin's out. Their defense is leaking, obviously. What do you think Kyle Dubas is thinking right now with the Leafs and their D?
Well, first of all, I don't think he's got a lot of wiggle room. I know that you said in your mailbag the other day and pointed out that, you know, if they could get like a defenseman that's around $3.5 million and gets, you know.
Yeah, get the other team to eat half of it. Yeah. You got to get the other team to eat 50%.
You know, one of the other teams could pick that up. We know that there is no cap in the playoffs, but they're still right up against the cap. You know what? I don't think there's a lot of panic. Muzzin did skate yesterday. You know, they have the break. They have their week-long break coming up. Their last game is Saturday against Chicago. Then they're off for a week. Then it's the All-Star weekend. So they don't play again until January 27th after their game against the Blackhawks Saturday. That gives them sufficient time. Muzzin's going to stay behind in Toronto, work on it. And they're hoping that, you know, one of the first two or three games back, he'll be back. So that'll be a big thing. But the other thing is, you know what? I mean, it's time for these young guys to show up. You know, Rasmus Sandin, their 2018 first-round pick, he was very, very good in his first game the other night back after his recall. He played six games earlier, but a couple of assists. The Leafs do this ceremonial thing after games where they got a basketball that was used by the champion Toronto Raptors in the final last year, and they presented Sandin the ball as opposed to Austin Matthews, who had a hat trick. So that's how much they value this kid. He's not going to be able to carry the world on his shoulders. But I think that, you know, Sheldon Keith, the one thing that one of the things I've been impressed with since he's got there is he doesn't, you know, he tells it like it is. He doesn't lack confidence. And he said, look, elite teams find a way to get past these injuries. And we consider ourselves an elite team, so we got to find a way. And when I look at it, guys, I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins and what they did. Like when Sidney Crosby was out of the lineup before that, when Malkin was out of the lineup, I'm not sure that how many games the Pittsburgh Penguins have played with Malkin, Crosby, and Letang all in the lineup at the same time. I don't think it's very many.
I think it's about seven.
And yet somehow they've been successful. So I think in the minds of the Maple Leafs, they're not panicking. They just say, let's see what we got, and let's go from there. I really don't think, guys, that there's any salvation on the trade market for them.
So we're going to finish the tour of Eastern Canada with the Montreal Canadiens. We're going to put you in the GM seat. What do you do with the Montreal Canadiens this year? They expected so much from that team. They haven't delivered. They're in a brutal tailspin right now. What do you do?
You know what, Sean? Here's the most head-scratching thing to me about the Montreal Canadiens is that, you know, I like the history of the game, and Montreal, to me, well, I know they haven't been successful and they haven't won a cup in over two decades, but they're still kind of with the history and the tradition for me. Even a guy from Toronto, they're like the New York Yankees of the National Hockey League. So I don't understand how during the summer, and I'm not sure where they stand right now, but I do know they have plenty of cap room. At one point, I think around training camp, the Montreal Canadiens had almost $9 million worth of cap space. How does that happen? I mean, you know, I just don't understand how you are not finding a way to use all the resources possible to put the best team on the ice. I mean, you know, spend money. Go get Taylor Hall, okay? I know Arizona got him. Go get him. Try to get some impact players. This team hasn't been able to score regularly in a league where goal scoring has gone up, you know, the last few years. They still have problems putting pucks in the net. And, you know, you can pay Carey Price all you want. But even he gets tired when he gives up one or two goals and you're losing every night. So when you're asking me, you know, what would you do? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, what's going on with the Montreal Canadiens right now is self-inflicted. I mean, they needed to spend money and get more quality people up front, in my opinion.
Last one for you, Zaz. We'll make it quick. The battle, you talked about the Battle of Ontario before. That's not back. The Battle of Alberta, on the other hand, seems to be back. What do you make of the Tkachuk hits and Cassian's response and what we could expect from more from the future Flames-Oilers games?
You know what? I mean, there's so many ways you can look at that, like who's at fault on the hits, whether blindside, whether they're predatorial. You know, I was surprised that Tkachuk didn't get into it, but, you know, they're also in a playoff race. But I'm sorry, I'm old school. I love this, okay? I remember the days of Dave Semenko and Joel Otto and the Battle of Alberta. And for people that aren't familiar with it, I mean, it was heated and hated. And you can ask Wayne Gretzky about that because I still think he's got a few bumps and bruises for those. So I think it's great. We asked Brady Tkachuk about that this morning in the Senators' dressing room, and he just laughed and he said, "Hey, we're Tkachuks. We play hard." And, you know, Keith is at the game tonight. Brady's parents are in the building. So if I see them, I'll probably ask him about it. But you know what we forget about, guys? I mean, you know, the three of us watch Keith Tkachuk play, and you look at his numbers, and he had some pretty impressive numbers. But Keith Tkachuk was a pain in the you-know-what as well. And it's good to see, or it's interesting to see, that his kids, when they step on the ice, have the same type of bloodline. So really quickly, I think it's great. It heats up the Battle of Alberta. And, man, would I love to see a playoff series between those teams, because they would just shut down that entire province.
You and me both. All of us would probably love to see it. Zeiss, thanks so much for hopping on with us, all right?
Thanks, guys, and have a great show.
You can follow Zeiss on Twitter, at Zeissberger. And, Sean, the Battle of Alberta obviously is alive and well now. Everybody's got that January 29th date circled, Flames versus Oilers in Edmonton. I had no problem with Matthew Tkachuk's hits. I thought that they were clean, legal hits. You know, a guy's coming around the goal. He's got one defender on him. You're going to help out your guy, and he's an opportunity to hit a guy clean and legal. You go ahead and hit him.
Yeah, it doesn't happen too much anymore. That hit's kind of been taken out of the game a little bit. I don't have an issue with it either. I don't have an issue with standing up for yourself after you're hit like that. I thought that Zach took it a little too far, and hence the suspension that followed. But look, it's that time of year now. Things matter. And you're seeing that in every divisional battle, right? Washington and Carolina has gotten ugly this year because they're so close in points. The New York and the New York Islanders, the New York Rangers, New York Islanders, same thing. You're going to see that because points are starting to matter, and things get heated. So it's great. It's great for hockey, you know, that you have these battles and it's something that you can tune into. But Zach Cassian, you could say, cost Edmonton that game and two vital points. He took that double minor and the Flames scored on it. And I think Matt Tkachuk will take that every day. He'll take all the name calling and everything else for the 2 points.
And he's a frustrating guy to play against. That's what you hear. You hear so much about him just being that pest, that frustrating guy, and especially because he can beat you on the score sheet too. But he has no business trying to fight Zach Cassian. Like, I would not expect him to be the one to go at him, you know, when they play on January 29th, because Matthew Tkachuk is just far too valuable to the Flames to be sitting in the box for 5 minutes.
No, and that's the whole key to that game. To be able to play that game, you need to be able to walk that line of driving somebody else to distraction and not getting distracted yourself. How hard must that be? You've been in verbal fights where you always want to get the last word in, and to not do it just makes you crazy. And he regularly does that to his advantage because he forces other people to do things that are out of their nature or are against the rules, and then he just walks away.
I try to get the last word in here, but it's okay. We never verbally spar, though.
I just let you. My words are more important. Yours are more plentiful.
See, there it is. That's the Matthew Tkachuk role right there. You just played it right there. But this one, another, we have no animosity between us. Nailed another podcast, another one in the books. We got one more to go before we both head to St. Louis. We'll record our next one on Tuesday.
Yeah, and then it's off to St. Louis for 5 days in the fun and sun.
No.
Maybe not.
Maybe it'll be sunny.
But
and
still,
it will be fun.
Still a great city. Cold. Looking forward to being back. First time since the Stanley Cup final. And we'll see you on Tuesday.
Indeed, and from St. Louis, we'll have our first remote episode of the At the Ring podcast. We'll record one in St. Louis during All-Star Weekend. The NHL's All-Decade team will be revealed Friday night of All-Star Weekend. So lots to talk about, lots to discuss, but still some games to be played before the NHL turns its focus to All-Star Weekend. So until Tuesday, when we record next, everybody enjoy the games.